All right, here we are. We're getting all pumped up, and we were going to say, hey, sports fans, or something like that.
Yay, sports.
And then, see, he got all excited, and then I was looking at the commercial that came on right before we did was Xbox. And really, we can't really compete Xbox One, Breakpoint, with Paul and JR.
Yes, Breakpoint wins every time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. In fact, we should actually make this into an Xbox app or game that we can just have people sit on the couch. Because let's be honest, right? It's the summer, right? It's nice and warm outside. Everybody is working. We're working from home, and that's why there's a lot of you on, which is great, but not so chatty on the chat when we're used to everybody talking and talking and talking before the show. But that's okay, because you're going to have tons of questions for what we have to talk about today.
Yes.
Now, isn't it ironic, though? Now, I don't know where you guys are across Canada and the entire world, but right here in Toronto, the weather is just gorgeous outside.
Really,
it's kind of ironic that we're talking about clouds today. See what I did there?
Very, very poor, but yes, go ahead.
Well, I had to, come on. There had to be a cloud joke in there somewhere.
Absolutely, yeah.
At least I didn't go with the, look, it's cloudy, or it's getting cloudy in here, or all those cloudy jokes.
Yeah.
I went the other way, the more positive way.
Absolutely.
Point being, right, for the longest time, and disclaimer, I used to do this a little bit too, whereas, it's kind of like, you're doing your thing, you leave the office, all of a sudden something happens, and you're like, boss calls you, and you're like, oh, can't fix it, can't do anything, I don't have access to my tools.
Mm.
I may have used that excuse once or twice.
I've done it a few more times than that.
Fine. And then, of course, I ended up being on the other side of the conversation, calling someone else, them to tell me that they can't do it because they don't have access to their tools. But guess what? Paul is about to debunk that that particular line, because that is no longer the case.
Yeah.
Right?
Pretty much. Yeah.
So I think if we're going to sum it up, yes, we can have like all of these crazy ways of explaining what we're going to talk about today, but really today is just going to be like, how do we talk about making our lives easier?
Yep.
Using Visual Studio in the cloud.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Fair?
Fair. Let's do it.
Okay. So okay. Let's talk. Yeah, let's start talking.
All right. So
what are we talking about today?
In
more detail than what I just went through.
Yeah, sure. So I don't know if the slides are up. Yes, they are. Okay, great.
So He questions these things.
Absolutely. So there's a few things that I want to talk about today. So we're going to talk about Visual Studio Online, which is our new service, relatively new anyways, that was brought out in RTM, released to market, I guess you could say, or released to web, RTW. At the Build conference in April. Now, there were some services that were available before that, either in full production mode or in beta, but there's a number of different services that were announced at Build as well. We're going to give an overview for you today over the next hour or so to really discuss what Visual Studio Online is. So that's the branding that we've actually provided for our cloud offering for our developer side of things. And then we'll talk a little bit about why we implemented our services for Visual Studio in the cloud the way we did. And it's actually kind of interesting, and I think it's pretty smart the way we've done it. And then, of course, we'll show you a few of the things that that are available within Visual Studio. Hopefully you have seen some of it, and if you haven't, that's fine too, because we'll show you right from scratch some of the things that we can do with this. So without further ado, let's actually get to it.
Wait. I forgot to say the usual. And you know what you'd think? We're six episodes in. You'd think I'd remember to actually remind you. Hey, guess what? This is a live show. Yes. On the page that you were viewing this on, there is a live chat. So make sure that you stick any questions that you have for either one of us in there. Keep it as dynamic as possible. Or if you are a Twitter type and you want to tweet your question, you can do that too. Make sure you use the hashtag BreakpointCA. That way I can see it, and we'll make sure to get Paul to answer those questions for you. Or if we don't happen to have the questions with us, or I should say the answers with us right now, we'll make sure we get them to you. So
great.
Okay. Now you can go ahead and start.
All right, let's
All
go.
Right, let's do this.
So what is Visual Studio Online? And really, when I think about it, you can consider it a service or a product or whatever it is. But I actually think it's more about choice, right? So if you've done anything with our products, our meaning Microsoft products in the past, you notice that we had a lot of server products, for example, a lot of client products, all sort of installable on your machines, whether they're server or PCs or whatever. And we've since gone to the cloud, and we've offered an awful lot of our products on the cloud now. So, for example, Microsoft Azure, which is near and dear to your heart, is sort of the core to our cloud platform. And in fact, most of what we run today in the cloud is based on Microsoft Azure. You may be using Office 365. So if you've got an iPad, even, for example, you may have seen the announcement that we made around the fact that Office for iPad is available for Office 365 customers if you want to edit and things like that. And that's also built off of our cloud. So we're seeing more and more of our products that are on-premise actually moving towards the cloud as well. And Visual Studio is no different. But the interesting thing about Visual Studio is you take a look at it, and I don't know if when somebody says Visual Studio to you, what you first think of. I don't know. What do you think?
So here's the thing. So Visual Studio to me, you have the IDE, which, by the way, I still think is gorgeous every time I go in there. And I know some people like the dark theme.
The dark, but I use light for demos.
And I prefer the light because everything in my world is light. But anyway.
And dark. Yeah.
I guess. So Visual Studio is like you think this gigantic thing that's going to sit on your desktop that's going to kill your memory.
Never.
But I mean, in a positive way, you can do all of the development that you need to do all in one place. And actually, especially, I don't know if you tuned into a couple of episodes before when you and I and Mark were talking about cross-platform Xamarin. Development.
Yep.
So it used to be that before, I don't know, like I guess with 2013, I thought, okay, Visual Studio equals .NET. Mm-hmm. That's it. And now Visual Studio equals pretty much everything these days. JavaScript, web front-end web development, HTML5, CSS, all that kind of stuff, .NET, Python, Node.js. Mm-hmm. Like, it's now becoming like the developer's one-stop shop to do anything and everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's actually a good way to put it, actually. I'm glad you put it up that way, because it isn't just about the IDE. But yes, the IDE is fully baked, and it's awesome. I love it. I open it up every day, as you can probably imagine.
But it's where I check my email.
Yeah. I don't check my email in Visual Studio. I'd like to know how you do that, actually.
Well, if you were to tune into a previous episode where we talked about DevOps and we saw work items and stuff like that, it's the better way to get emails for a developer.
Nah. Sure. Okay. Nah. I'll buy it. Okay.
Come on.
There you go.
Right? So. Wouldn't it be better to get your work items as part of your environment than get it in an email, hey, I need you to work on this, this, and this?
That's true.
So there you go. It's the developer's email.
And it's funny because that's actually one of the first types of things that we're going to talk about is how you actually manage your software projects in the cloud. But before we get to that, though, I talked about the fact that it's about choice, right? So you have your on-premise version of whatever that you're actually building. Or using, and we also provide a cloud version. So the Office 365 example is a really good example of this, right? So you can choose to, you know, host your documents on your local PC, or you can host it in our cloud, you can manage it and all that kind of stuff. Office 365 isn't about moving everything to the cloud, although you can certainly do that if you want, but it's about choice as to where you actually want to put things, right? And Visual Studio is no different. We offer you the choice now to decide what workloads are most important to you that you want to keep inside your firewall on your local machines or on your local servers. And instead, the stuff that isn't as important to you in that respect, or maybe things that you can see advantages to using the cloud, be able to use the cloud when it actually makes sense to do so. And we'll talk a little bit about that in some of the workloads that we're seeing. So that's really what the premise behind Visual Studio Online is. It's not a cash grab per se. It's really just more of a, let's give you options as to how what you can do on your daily basis on a development standpoint, give you the option of doing it in the cloud if that's something that you want to do. So Visual Studio Online, as I said before, was officially launched at the Build Conference in April of 2014, so last month, technically. And it was exciting because it was a culmination of a lot of hard work from the product team. So kudos to them. They did an amazing job with the services and continue to do so. So the great thing about the cloud, and if you've ever used Microsoft Azure or, you know, other cloud products that we have, you'll notice that the cadence as to how we deliver new features or functionality to those products is increasing compared to what we've done in the past around on-premise software. So whereas, you know, it was more of a monolithic sort of release as to, you know, like every year there's a different change or something like that. Now we're seeing it, you know, like for example, Visual Studio Online, there's a cadence of every 6 weeks we're adding new features and functionality or even new services to the product line. So that is something that's definitely changed as far as the mindset is concerned for the team. But you'll see here there's a number of different sort of bubbles between hovering around this cloud. And these are some of what we call, you could call it, say that maybe there are products. I prefer to call them workloads. And the reason why I say that is because the strategy behind the Visual Studio team's delivery of these various different services is not to say, well, let's create products in the cloud, but let's be smart about exactly what do developers and development teams, so not just developers, but also project managers, testers, IT operations, all those types of people. What do they do in a software project? And what workloads do they use to actually get that done? And then we can compartmentalize instead of by product or service, but actually say, what are the types of things that workloads that are being done, and see if we can offer a cloud option as part of that. And those bubbles that you see around the cloud are these workloads. And we're going to talk about each of these things in their own sort of special way. And the first one I'm going to talk about is Agile. So this is the fact that, you know, we have the ability for you to be agile with your projects in the cloud. So managing the process by which you actually build your software and, you know, getting the right reports and all those types of things that are important to you for your software. So I'm actually going to talk first about Team Foundation Online. And if you've used Visual Studio Application Lifecycle Management tools in the past, or maybe you've seen some of the Breakpoint episodes that we've had in the past, you'll notice that I do an awful lot of talking about TFS, Team Foundation Server, and I have an on-premise demo that I have that you can actually download as well, right? And the interesting thing about this is just a screenshot of the Team Foundation Online service, where you can basically see, you know, this is the Team Foundation product that you know and love on-premise, but if we've actually brought it to the cloud, which is kind of cool. So without actually getting too much more into it from a slide perspective, let's actually take a look and see what this looks like. So I'm going to exit this, and we're going to go into, first of all, You know what? I'm actually going to start a new browser just because this will be easier. I'm going to go through the process of signing up for a new account on Visual Studio Online, and then we're going to create a TFS instance for that project. So I'm going to in private browsing. You might be wondering why. It's just because I've already logged in with another Microsoft ID, so I just want to make sure that I'm not going to muck that up. So the first thing I'm going to do is go to visualstudio.com. Pretty easy, right? Now what I want to do is I want to sign in. So this is just the main portal for our product, a Visual Studio product. So if I sign in, and what's going to happen here is just going to ask me where do I want to sign in. I've already created an account, so I'm just going to say breakpoint_ca@outlook.com and put in my super secret password, which no one will be able to hack. Wait for this to go. Okay, we need a few more details, so I'm just going to put in my name, and we'll just say this is my name, Paul Aberge. Select a country, and we're in Canada doing this recording, the great, beautiful country of Canada. So we're going to go there and just click on continue. So we'll just wait for that.
Give me time to load the national anthem. I was going to go. I was going to start singing, but.
So that's pretty funny. So here we have my information. This is nothing too wild, but what you see here on the right here is something called create a free account. So what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to create that free account. And this is actually creating a Visual Studio Online account. And it's going to ask me for an account URL. Now, I'm going to fly by the seat of my pants a bit here to see if we actually have Breakpoint available. So let's see if we can create that account.
Please.
Somebody took it.
Of course.
So we'll do breakpoint_ca, create account.
Oh. You know why someone took it. It's an awesome name.
Okay. So we'll just do breakpoint.ca. So unfortunately, you can't use underscore, so let's just do that. And once it's created the account, just wait for it. It's going to redirect me to my Visual Studio Online portal. So what we need to do first is we need to create our first project. So let's actually do that. So if you take a look here, for example, we'll create a project name, and we'll say breakpoint .ca demo. And we'll give it a description, just say whatever, just because. And what you see here is, this is actually fairly similar to what you would do if you're creating a project within TFS, the on-premise in a way, right? So you have the ability to say, okay, what kind of version control do I want for this project? So we offer centralized version control, which we've talked about in previous episodes, and you can take a look at that if you want. And we also provide Git support. So if you actually wanted to do your applications using Git for version control, you can definitely do that. And in fact, a little point of trivia, when we introduced Git version control management into TFS, it actually went to the cloud before we actually put it into the on-premise version. So that's kind of interesting. So we have that, and then basically we have process templates. So the process templates are exactly what you've maybe seen before in TFS, which is basically a Scrum, Agile Scrum, maybe just generic Agile software development, or maybe a waterfall or CMMI or type of thing. So we can basically set that up, create the project. So I'm just going to create this like this and just wait for this to create the project. Wait for it.
Now, while we're waiting, the crazy part about all of this is that, you know, obviously it seems like you're going through very quickly and whatever. I just think back to the day where we actually had to set up servers and stuff like that to actually be able to get you to the point where you're actually doing it that
exactly.
quickly.
Exactly, yeah.
So if nothing else, I mean, think about all the time spent not having to set that stuff up. And more importantly, maintaining it afterwards,
yep.
right? It's one thing to set it up, but then as your teams use it, and obviously you know, the more you use it, the more you have to maintain. All of this stuff is maintained for you.
Exactly.
Right? Yet works the exact same way as it would if you were to do it on premises. So.
You got it. That's right. So it's actually pretty cool, right? So already I've already got this project template set up, and it's ready to go, and I can actually go through and I can pin some items and things like that if I want to. I'm not going to do too much with this, but basically what we can do now is we can use this for version control and for managing our work. So the types of things that you did in TFS, like managing your code, for example, will go here. Obviously, there's nothing in here because we just created something. Work, so you can actually manage your work item and track your work items and things like that, and we'll talk a little bit about this. So you can see here, because we use the Scrum template, it's actually managed things in sprints, and you can manage this stuff as well. And then you have things like your builds, so you know, you got continuous integration, which we'll talk a little bit more about in a second. And then you have other things such as, you know, testing capabilities. So you can create your test plans and things like that within TFS online as well. So that's all well and good. But what you can also do, for example, if I go back home, you can actually manage things. So you can actually, for example, create, you know, do your settings and things like that and manage your members. So what's interesting is, by default, you know, this person, this Paula Berge person that I signed in as breakpoint_ca@outlook.com, is basically the main guy, or main person, I should say, not necessarily a guy, that's actually part of this project. Now, you as a software developer get up to five different users that you can add to this project for free. So you can make use of TFS in the cloud for free for up to 5 team members, which is kind of cool, right? So if you're actually building a mobile app and it's you and your friend that are building it, for example, and you needed a version control you can in the cloud, you can definitely do that. You have the ability to do that. So I can add a new member, so I can add a user. And in this case, you can add identities or whatever, for example. And then in this case, I'll do, say, for example, plaberge@outlook.com. And check the name and save the changes. Okay? So just please wait. So what it's done is it's actually brought in my own real address, for example, in this case. So don't spam my email address because I just gave it away, unfortunately. But this is basically a user that I've added. So we could even add Jonathan if we wanted to and things like that.
Then I'd get spammed.
Then you get spammed, so we won't do that. So what's interesting here is, you know, up to 5 different users you get for free. Now, what's also interesting is if you're using Visual Studio Professional, Premium, or Ultimate today, you probably got an MSDN subscription with it. That's just mainly the way we provide these types of things. So an MSDN subscription is something that provides you with benefits beyond just the integrated development environment. So you get, you know, the ability to install non-production use of different types of software, depending on your version of Visual Studio and MSDN that you have. But the bottom line is, this MSDN license is tied to a Microsoft account, or a Live ID as it used to be called. And this is my Live ID for my MSDN Ultimate subscription. So what's interesting is that any MSDN subscriber can be added or create a TFS online account without being counted towards those five members. So that's pretty cool, right? So I can add as many, you know, MSDN subscribers to this specific team, and then it's not going to be charged towards my my added users, my five free users. So that's pretty cool there. So right there, that's something that you can actually do as well, and you get a whole bunch of different things associated with it. So that's all pretty cool, right? So all of a sudden, I've actually created this. I can make use of it and all that kind of stuff. Now, I'm actually going to get out of this because I've already got a TFS instance that I've already created, and I'm going to get back into my own version of it. So we'll get back into TFS Online. And as you can see here, I got a few different projects that I'm actually working on, for example. We're going to dive a little bit deeper into this PJL ALM Days 2 project, which is an MVC application. But you can see, for example, this is just the main sort of page for my Visual Studio Online account that I have. Now, before I go any even further, if I go here, and you see, for example, we have, you know, these various different things. This is my PJL ALM Days account. So if I actually wanted to add work items, I could do that manually, as I normally could with TFS if I wanted to. But what I can also do is I can add work items or track, you know, different tasks within my project by going into Excel, for example. So if you're using Excel 2010 or above, you can make use of this team foundation or this team Explorer add-in to Microsoft Office. And it allows you to connect to any TFS instance, whether it's in the cloud or on-premise, which is kind of cool. So I'm going to create a new list from this. And basically, the list is going to, well, first of all, it's going to connect to my specific team foundation server. And we'll go into the PJL ALM Days project. So we're going to connect to it. Okay. And it's going to ask me for a query. So one of the things that we do within TFS is you can create queries on different work items. So like if you want to create a query for your bugs or for your test plans or for your product backlog items or requirements or whatever your terminology is, you can actually do all that, which is kind of cool. I'm just going to do, for example, if I go to shared queries here, and if I go, I'll go to my queries and go to the backlog items, for example. What it's going to do is it's going to bring down any sort of queries that I have or work items. And as you can see, I have a whole bunch here that I've actually done. So this is going to the cloud and backwards, for example. And as you can see here, I've got all these things that I've already created. So I'm not going to create more of these things. I'm going to create a different one. So say, for example, here, introduce breakpoint episode. Do some stuff, whatever, right? You know, and basically I'll create this as a product backlog item. So there it is. And we'll put this into Sprint 1 just because that's the one that I'm currently working on, just for the heck of it. And then, for example, I can add tags. And tags are ways that you can sort of add some meta information about your work items. So like if you want to say, for example, do, you know, this could be web, and do some stuff could be project management, if I wanted to. So you can use these tags to sort of further refine what your work items are all about and things like that. So basically, this is a bit of a project structure. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go back in here because I've got to get the focus on the thing. And I'm going to publish these things. Now, what I want you to do is look very closely here because it's actually going to give me an ID. So once we go to the publish, wait for this to show up, 56 and 57. So that's cool. What that means is that I've actually published from Excel to TFS in the cloud these different new work items that I created, and it's provided me with the ID for it automatically. So if I actually go back into TFS, and I believe it was this one right here, and if I go to work, wait for this to load up. And we'll go to the backlog just to make it a little bit easier for you to see. Okay, and as you can see here, introduce breakpoint episode and do some stuff. So that's all the new stuff that I've actually created. kind of cool, right? So you don't even have to go into the TFS portal if you don't want to actually manage this stuff. So that's kind of cool.
And what's cooler to me about this is that now you can actually start sharing all that data with people who are not just part of your core team or people that just want to, let's say, monitor, or your project managers or your business stakeholders, whoever wants to go in there and check it out. It's all easily consumable from applications that.
Absolutely.
And very much so bi-directional, which is actually kind of cool.
Yep.
Since we're already looking at the portal here, and we had a great question on the chat, can a user own multiple VSO accounts? And by the way, VSO, for those that don't know, is Visual Studio Online.
Yes. It's a good question. I believe the answer is no, because it's a one-to-one relationship. You can have multiple projects within your Visual Studio Online account, but unfortunately you can't have multiple different accounts tied to a specific Microsoft ID.
And you can also be invited to different Visual Studio Online teams that you can do with your single Microsoft account, but it's still just the one.
Yeah, just like what I did earlier, right? So the person I invited in the earlier part of the demo when I created that TFS instance is actually that my ID that I have for this Dark Star Studios at visualstudio.com.
I always invite myself to parties, but
that's the way it works, right? So
someone's got to do it.
so there's some flexibility from that respect, but it's not necessarily one of those things where you can have multiple different accounts, at least that I'm aware of. If anybody knows any different, please chime up.
Let us know.
Yeah, for sure.
But we'll look into it, too. If we find something different than what we just said, then we'll post it in the comments when you're watching this on the recording.
Yeah, and it's a great question, by the way, so keep it up. And as you can see here, for example, one of the great things about the new version of Visual Studio TFS is the fact that you have all these things where you can basically, you know, look at the Kanban board, for example. In this case, we can check in the code and put this, probably won't go back in progress yet. There you go. So you have the ability, see error because I can't go backwards once it's done. So if I actually go back or whatever, then I can set it up. So that all the stuff that you typically could do within TFS on-premise, you can do in the cloud. There's a few differences. It's not quite a parity yet, but we're working on things. Nothing to announce specifically, but a good example of something that might be a little bit more difficult for you to do is, say, for example, you've modified the methodology template. So if you remember when I created the first project, I said I'm going to use the Scrum template and things. If you need to modify the methodology, you can do that on-premise, but you can't do that necessarily in the cloud yet today. So stay tuned. Maybe we'll have some announcements down the road. Nothing to announce at this point, but that's basically some of the things that you have to be aware of. But you know, for typical types of projects that you need to do, this is perfectly good for you to work with. So that, in a nutshell, is basically some of the stuff that we have for TFS. So I'm actually going to go back to the slides, and we'll just start talking a little bit more about some of the other features. So what did we talk about in the previous demo? So we have how we sign up for a Visual Studio Online account. Very simple to do that. And then obviously setting up a project, I showed you how to do that. Again, very, very simple. And then working with TFS in the cloud, I showed you how you can use Excel for work items and things like that. We're going to show you a few other things as well, because all of the code that I'm going to show you is actually from that project that is in the cloud as well. So you can see that there's lots of stuff that you can do. So, all right. Next thing, application insights. This is actually really cool. This is a new service, if you will, from Microsoft that allows you to really get some deep, for lack of a better term, insights into your applications, right?
Dun, so,
dun, dun. Dun, 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 yeah. And what's interesting about this is that it's an analytics platform, so there's lots of analytics platforms out there, but I'm pretty excited about how this has been built, because I think it's pretty smart. And it gives you a lot of the things that typical sort of analytics platforms provide, right? So, you know, is your application available, as you can see on the slide, right? You know, is it, you know, doing what it needs to do? Like, is it up? Are there parts of the services that you might have within your application that are up or down and that kind of stuff? Yeah, pretty much table stakes. And then you also have things such as performing. So, you know, deeper insight into exactly how your application is working in a production environment or whatever environment you're actually hooking this up to, right? So you can actually do some test cases on, you know, your code that you actually push to production and things like that using application insights. And you can even hook this into things such as IntelliTrace, if you're familiar with that, right? So allowing your developers to have a good understanding of maybe some issues that might be starting to pop up in production for whatever reason, and then attaching things like IntelliTrace logs and things like that to the process, so that, you know, developers can fix these problems really, really quickly compared to, you know, situations where it might be very difficult to find where the actual bug is. So this is also something that is really, really great for Application Insights as well. But the thing that I find actually the most interesting about Application Insights is the improving, or in other words, we say, you know, is your application succeeding? And this is where it gets really interesting. So you used to be a developer and you used to manage software developers just like me. And one of the things that I'm sure you've run into is when you had a software project, and feel free to chime in on the chat window as well, because I'm sure you guys have actually figured this out too.
And in case you're watching this on demand as well, post in the comments.
Comments if you want, absolutely.
We're watching.
Yes. You have a team of, you know, for your software project, developers, IT operations, business analysts, stakeholders, project management, all those things, right? The first part of a project is always figuring out, okay, what are we going to build, right? And that's usually part of the analyst's job, right? So the analyst will go to the users and say, what do you need from the software product that we're building, right? So whether it's like an iteration on an existing project, or you're actually creating a whole new software system or whatever, right? And the users will say, well, I need this, and I need that, and I need this.
Right? And then the analyst will come back and be like, well, what do you really need? Because you can't afford that.
Well, there's that, but okay, and absolutely. But beyond that, once there's an agreement as to what the scope of the project is, you know, those asks from the business are then transcribed by the analyst to say, these are what the requirements are. Right. And that's all good, right?
Right?
So then, you know, your developers will code to those requirements and test cases will be created and executed upon those requirements based on the code. And then the deployment will happen. And then once you're in production, you think, okay, great, we've done our job for this release and then we're good to go. Well, in some cases, you may never find out if that's the case or not, right?
More often than not.
So one of the things that we do provide within Application Insights is get really deep information as to how the application's actually being used by your user base.
Right.
Right. So what pages are they spending the most time on? What controls on the page are they spending the most time working with? Is there a lot of confusion, you know, because they're doing a lot of clicking within, you know, 2 seconds of each other and things like that? So what you thought was most important about the application typically is not, right? That's the thing that I found and I've learned over the years, is the fact that you may think you've built the greatest application that does this really, really well, and in fact, your users need this instead of this.
Right.
And so what this does is that it actually helps you figure that out quickly and have a good conversation with your user base ahead of time, being proactive instead of reactive. And therefore, you can focus your energies and your resources towards making the parts of the application that are most important to your users better. And that's really where the succeeding part is. And I love that part of this this part of the product. So
and the truth is, I've always thought of that as almost like a form of testing. Because we always think testing as everything that you do, to your point, everything that you do before you deploy. But you know what? The truth is that when you put it in the hands of the people who are really going to use it and who are actually using it as their day-to-day, let's be honest, they're the ones doing the testing.
Yeah.
Right. So yes, you've done functional testing. Yes, you've done performance testing. Yes, you know, from to the requirements or to the word of the requirements, everything is good to go. But then when you put it into real life, you know, there's a reason why there is that saying, you know, it was good on paper.
Yeah.
Right. Because you never know. And without insights, how would you know?
Exactly.
The answer to that is actually the person coming to you and be like, well, you know what, this is taking me too long. This is, you know, this is not working the way it's supposed to, or so on and so forth. The problem is then you're so busy dealing with the reaction versus actually having that telemetry ahead of time and being able to proactively approach your users, which then, to your point about succeeding, delighting your users and saying, hey, look at all these updates that we've made.
Yep.
And, you know, some of them may not even actually come to you and tell you that they don't like what they're saying. They'll be like, well, okay, I got to suck it up, whatever.
Either that or they just can't verbalize exactly what they need because they don't realize they're missing it in a way until it's actually there.
Right. Yeah. And now I'm going to put the, you know, like the the work part of it aside for a second, and I'm going to put your person hat on. Think about how much more successful you become as a developer or as an architect or whatever when you can actually have something that you've put out that someone actually enjoys working with.
Imagine that. Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's your baby, and so you want people to actually enjoy using it. And so, you know, yes, granted, it's a little bit of a mushy way of looking at application insights, but I think, at least for me, a lot of times we spend time looking at the, you know, the technical feature that is application insights, but think about what business impact it can actually have being put into your applications.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
And of course, the beauty of it is, you may have called it out before, but this runs on Azure. So.
Yes.
I had to put it out there.
No, well, it's good.
It's the cloud talk.
Well,
come on.
So here, let's go into our
We're doing a demo, are we?
So we're going to do demo.
Nice.
So what I've got here is I got, for example, right here, I got Visual Studio open. I'm going to start off, first of all, within Visual Studio just to explain something. So the way it works with Application Insights is right now it's available for web projects. So that means ASP.NET. It also means, you know, potentially PHP projects if you want, or, you know, classic ASP or JSP or whatever it is that you want, because basically there's a JavaScript API that's available for you to make use of. So that's great. It also is provided for Windows Store and Windows Phone applications. New things might be coming out, and I'll let the product team announce those if and when they're ready to do that. But this is where we're at from a scoping perspective right now for Application Insights. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a new project. And we're not going to get too deep into the project, but I just want to show you exactly how this works. So I'm in Visual C Sharp here, for example. And if I go to the web and I click on ASP.NET Web Application, what you'll see here on the side, if you have the SDK for Application Insights installed, and I'll explain where you can get that in a second, is there's this new checkbox saying add Application Insights to the project. So right away, without having to do anything, you actually can hook in Application Insights into your project before you even get started, which is kind of cool, right? So it sets up the structure for you and all that kind of stuff. What it will require you to do is log into your Visual Studio Online account, which I have already done here, for example. So you have the ability to do that. And in this case, and you don't even have to put it into source control in TFS in the cloud or whatever. In fact, I won't bother doing that for this project specifically, but you can see, for example, that that's something that's possible. So I'm just going to click on OK. And we'll wait for this to show up. And we'll just say, yeah, that's fine. It's an MVC website. And in this case here, for example, now for some reason, because of the screen resolution, this is going to be a little bit difficult to. Okay. So basically, you can even create it, as you said, on Windows Azure for your website application, which is nothing specifically new. Okay, it's going to make it.
Yeah, it's cool nonetheless.
Yeah, okay. So hold on a second here. This is going to be interesting. Sign into my account. Okay, that's fine. Sometimes it does this.
Well, it needs to know where to deploy to, right?
Yeah, it kind of does. So unfortunately, for some reason. Oh, okay, there we go. So we'll just say configure this into a Windows Azure application. I'm just going to leave it as the default because, you know, that's a really user-friendly name and that's what we want to keep. So that's what we'll do. Just click OK, and it's creating the web application. So we'll just wait for this to start showing up. The Solution Explorer will be setting things up. Wait for it.
Listen, magic takes a couple of seconds.
Magic does take some time.
I mean, the truth is that it is, in fact, doing a lot behind the scenes. So it's not like it's just sitting there and twiddling its thumbs and being like, well, I'm going to make Paul wait because he's doing this live.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, just wait for this.
Should I have Jeopardy music while you're doing this? Or the other day I was doing...
Tony doing the recording there is doing Jeopardy music. That's funny.
The other day when we were doing...
it's taking a long time.
Another show.
Yep.
Mickey Scruffy Fern, if you guys want to follow him on Twitter. He was compiling something, and he's like, man, I'd love to have some hold music right now. I'm like, why hold music? I'll one-up you, and we'll call it compile music.
Yes, right? Absolutely.
It's a new term. If you want some compile music, let me know.
Absolutely. So that's pretty funny.
We'll see how we can,
I think we
can
should
get it
do
into
that.
The budget.
Yeah, for sure. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to go into the Solution Explorer now that the project's already been created, and wow, for whatever reasons. Deciding to take a little bit of time. So if I go into views and I go to shared, for example, if I go into, where is it here? Index, that's what I wanted. If I double click on the index.cshtml page right here, you can see, for example, we have some information here. And what's...
I was just going to say maybe we can make more room on the screen, get rid of your Server Explorer unless you need it.
No, I don't need it. You're right.
There we go.
So actually, that wasn't what I wanted. It's actually in the view start, I think. Nope. For some reason, it's deciding to give me some issues here.
Always it, never pilot error.
Yeah, yeah. It's pilot error completely here. Let's see here. That's funny. Okay, let me show you in somewhere else, okay? So basically what it's supposed to do is it's supposed to set up the application insights, the code and things like that. Now, what you see here as well is that you see that there's an applicationinsights.config. So if I double, as you can see here, there's some information about the application insights thing. So it gives me the account ID, and I'm just going to go through that very, very quickly. So again, it's sort of set this up so that it's actually monitoring all these things as well. So right away, you can see that there's all this stuff. Now, if I actually want to go to, say, for example, usage analytics, in this case, just wait for this to show up, it's going to bring me to the portal. So as you can see here, you can say, for example, where's my data? I don't have anything set up here, so it's going to give me some instructions as to do this. So all you got to do is double click on the application insights side of things, and you can see, for example, what's going on. Now, if I go to overview, for example, you'll see here within the dashboards for application insights, and we'll go to the, web application one, because that's where we're in. You can see, for example, there's a few things, such as the development feed and usage, and right now there's nothing there because we don't have a whole lot going on in performance. So instead, what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to go to my PJL ALM Days 2 application, which I got some data for. So as you can see here, we have, you know, some information about, you know, application usage, how many sort of, hits per day or whatever it is that I might have, sessions per day. Not a whole lot there because this is just a demo application, for example. But one of the other things that's really interesting is we have an event, a raw event stream. So what's interesting here is I'm going to actually go to Visual Studio and I'm going to go to my PJL ALM Days solution. And here, for example, you'll see that, you know, we also have the MVC application, so it's all there. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to make this a little bit smaller. Actually, what I'm going to do is I'm going to make this part of the screen go that size. And I'm going to put this on this side. So apologies, but because of the screen resolution, it makes it a little bit difficult. Now I'm going to start debugging. Now the debugger can attach to Application Insights as well to provide you with information around the raw event stream. So if I just click on this, it's going to bring up a new window once we've set it up. Just wait for it to show up. It's build succeeded. And we'll wait for this to just show up. Okay, there we go. And I'll make this right here. So it's waiting for localhost, and hopefully we'll start seeing some information here. Just takes a little bit of time, so just wait for it.
It does have to compile.
Well, yeah, I think it's also because of the recording, maybe that we're doing on this machine.
This is probably true.
Yeah.
It's because we want to make sure that everyone can see our desktop.
Yeah. And wait just like us for stuff. Oh, there we go. So you can see, for example, it's already getting application telemetry from my application, which is kind of cool, right? So it's telling me, for example, you know, all the various different things that are happening. So right here, you can actually get a raw event stream based on debugging as to, you know, what's going on with the application. So if I want to, I can click on this and go to the contact page, and all of a sudden, real-time information, we get some, eventually it'll, yeah, there you go. So it's going to the home contact, and it gives me where it's coming from and you know, the timing and stuff like that. So again, you get that real-time sort of integration with the application, and you can sort of monitor how your application is being used that way too, which is kind of useful in a lot of ways.
And more importantly, you saw it, it's live, right? Like this is happening right now.
Yeah.
So the beauty of it is that if you're looking at the data, and I'm not suggesting that you're going to sit there and look at it 24/7, but mm-hmm. what it does allow you to do is get that live information as people are actually using it to make sure that things are going properly. So imagine you just deployed, you're just starting to get your users on.
Yep.
That's gold right there.
Exactly.
Or if you're looking for, even if it's something that has nothing to do with functionality, think about this. Let's say you want to plan a deployment.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You want to figure out what time is the best time to do a deployment where it has minimal impact on people.
Yep.
Granted, this is giving you way more detailed telemetry, but it's actually showing you live usage of the application, which would allow you to make better and more informed decisions as to what you're doing.
Exactly.
Right? So, I mean, again, we look at it from, hey, this is good data and it's great data, but there's so many different ways that we can actually use the data.
Yep, exactly. And as you can see here, for example, as I clicked into some of this stuff, you know, you get some more detailed information. You can add some things. So, like, in addition to just, you know, raw event stream, you can add metrics to it. So you can plug into the Application Insights API and add metrics that are most important to you, for example, to monitor. And then you can even do things such as, you know, pin this to your dashboard if you wanted to and all that kind of stuff. So it's actually quite useful to do some of this stuff. And there's all sorts of things from availability, like I said before, performance, and then, you know, is it succeeding? And then obviously some diagnostics around debugging and stuff. So early days, and it's in beta, and right now as in beta, it's actually free for you to use, so feel free to make use of it and see how useful it is. I have actually started hooking it up into a project that I'm working on myself, so hopefully it'll help me sort of figure out exactly what's going on with my application. So
I mean, it is rock solid, yeah, so beta, fine, mm-hmm. but I mean, this is stuff that, really, there's no reason why you wouldn't put it in everything.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, platforms, the team is looking at different platforms that currently are not supported and seeing if there's value in doing that. So down the road, just keep your eyes open on the portal, for example, because you know, they'll add new information as it becomes available and things like that around how you can actually make use of Application Insights across various different things. So,
cool.
All right, so what do we see? So how do you get into Application Insights? I showed you how you can get into it actually from Visual Studio. You can get into it via the Visual Studio Online portal as well, which I didn't show you, but I can probably show you a little bit later. Also, hooking up a project to Application Insights, really easy. And in fact, if you have an existing project, you can actually hook that up very, very easily as well for you to make sure how you can actually use Application Insights in an existing project. And then obviously working with some of the telemetry. So I just did a very, very, very quick scratch of the surface. There's so much more to it. But there's some deeper dives on Channel 9, which you'll probably be watching this if you're on demand already. You can actually take a look at that as well. All right, so load testing. So I don't know how many people in the audience are doing load testing today. Feel free to chime in if you are. But the interesting thing about this is that load testing can be easy or it can be difficult, depending on how you sort of set things up. And one of the things that Microsoft has done is with the Visual Studio Ultimate SKU, which is what you need for load testing, we try to make it as easy as possible for you to actually do a load test. And that's all well and good, but the way it worked, at least traditionally before, was the licensing for load testing within Visual Studio is you basically can do as many virtual users on a single box as possible. And if you max out on, you know, capacity on that box for load testing, then you need to add a second box with another Visual Studio Ultimate license, which is fine. That's typically what you need to do if you're doing high load testing. But managing those boxes and setting them up and all that kind of stuff, a test rig is what it's usually called, can be difficult and sometimes costly depending on how it's done. So what we've done is, again, taking a look at workloads. So we took a look at, you know, managing your project as a workload. We took a look at how you can manage the effectiveness of your application as a workload. And now we're taking a look at testing as a workload. We've actually added capability for you to do your load testing in the cloud, which is kind of interesting. So this is just an example of a load test that was done. I'm actually going to show you instead how this works so that you can see a little bit easier. So I'm going to go back into Visual Studio because in order to do a load test, you need Visual Studio Ultimate. Just going to close this specific project. So just close solution. And yeah, I want to stop debugging, so we'll do that. Just wait for this to show up. And now we're going to go to recent projects and solutions. So I actually have a web load test that I've already created. So where is it here? There we are. So I'll just load this up. So I've already I've already pre-recorded the test itself, just in the interest of time. There's lots of tutorials out there for creating a load test if that's something that you need information on. But basically, I've done this. So basically, what I did is I'm pinging I'm actually pinging that PJL ALM site, which is kind of interesting right there, right? So I'm going to ping it with 250 virtual users to see if it actually runs properly and things. So what I've done is I've created a load test to do that.
I'm going to pause you for a second, though.
Yeah.
Because you actually said something fundamental that I think, I mean, for you, is like, oh, no big deal. But how all of this happens is just you clicking buttons and then things go off and get stuff done. But
yes,
this was previously, like, if you wanted to send all those connections and stuff like that. And by the way, correct me if I'm wrong, but you actually have the ability to specify where you're going to send them from and mm-hmm. all that. Like, that's stuff that here we're dragging and dropping and clicking and whatever. But
yep,
think about the infrastructure that's actually required to do that. So yeah, it's easy to say this stuff is like, oh yeah, load testing in the cloud, fine, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually not whatever, considering the amount of sheer hardware that you're not having to deal with by
yep,
basically just offloading that back up to the cloud.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing is this project that I have here is it's not specific to in the cloud or on-premise at this point.
Right.
Well, it kind of is, but it isn't. I'll explain that in a second. Basically, what it means is that I've recorded a bunch of steps that I've actually done to my website, so
right,
it basically records it as I do it. And then I specified, you know, okay, I want to create a load test, and I'm saying, okay, well, how many virtual users do I need? What browsers do I want to support? In this case, you can sort of see here, it's 100% Internet Explorer 9 is going to be hitting it, but I could add Chrome, Firefox, even Safari for iPhone, or whatever. And then the network mix could be a whole bunch of different things, such as, you know, mobile 3G, 4G, LAN, dial-up even, and stuff like that. That's all part of Visual Studio Ultimate. It's always been there. But what's interesting is what if I double-click on the local test settings, just wait for this to show up. You'll see here that the test settings, we're saying that, okay, we can run tests using a local computer or test controller, which is what we typically had before in Visual Studio 2012 and below. But now we've added this part, run tests using Visual Studio Online. So if you have a Visual Studio Online account, you can make use of load testing. Now, if you're an MSDN subscriber, you actually get an allocation of minutes, virtual user minutes that you can use for load testing. If you're not a MSDN subscriber, which probably would not be the case if you're using Ultimate anyways, then you would have to pay for extra virtual user minutes. But let's take a look at this. I've already got this set up to run tests in Visual Studio Online, and we'll just start running the test. So we'll go here, run the load test. Now what's going to happen, and this is the beauty of it, right? And again, this is the beauty of the cloud. You can see it's connected to my Darkstar Studios at visualstudioonline.com or visualstudio.com. And so basically it's saying, okay, well, I recognize that this is your account, so we're going to allocate the minutes that you're using, the 250 virtual user minutes, because I'm running 250 virtual users for 1 minute on a test. And basically what it's doing is it's actually queuing up this load test in the cloud using Microsoft Azure. So instead of me having to set up a whole bunch of boxes side by side and co-hit that website, instead I've decided that I'm going to run this in the cloud. So Microsoft Azure in the background is setting up the resources automatically without me having to do anything, spinning up the services necessary to do that.
That's what I was getting at.
Exactly, right? And then boom, go, right? So as you can see here, it's actually going through the process of setting it up. There we go. So here we have the performance. You'll wait for it and you'll start seeing that there's some information that's going to come up hopefully soon. Should be showing up soon anyways. But you can see, for example, there's some information that'll show up here once it starts recording it or sending it to my dashboard. You can even take a look at the details. In this case, there isn't anything specific. See, there we go. It's running through the 1 minute test. So let's see what's going on in the graphs. Maybe there's some information now. Yep, there we go. So you can see, for example, maybe I have some issues right here. So as you can see, you know, various different response times and everything else like that, or, you know, user load, we have, 25 right now, and then it's going to go up or whatever. Actually, sorry, I used 225 virtual users, not 250, I should say. But as you can see there, it gives you all this stuff, and I didn't have to do anything. Typically, this is kind of complicated, depending on what you're trying to do for your load test.
And more importantly, this is live.
It's live.
This is live testing right now, so mm-hmm. that telemetry data that's coming in. Here, let's actually make that full screen so that you guys can see. That telemetry data that's coming in is very much so, probably like a second or two after it actually happened on the servers.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what the latency is, but it's certainly not that much, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool right there. So I can do all these load tests without having to set up the infrastructure to do it. Now, I'm going to go into my Visual Studio Online account. And if I take a look here, for example, it should show up. Yeah. So if I take a look here, we have load testing. So as a Visual Studio Ultimate Ultimate with MSDN subscriber, I get an allocation of 15,000 virtual user minutes. So the number of virtual users times the minutes I'm using, you get that per month. So it's use it or lose it, it doesn't roll over. And if you need more virtual user minutes than you have available in the cloud, then you have to pay for those virtual user minutes. But as you can see here, I haven't used that many right now, but that's something that's available to you. So that's kind of cool right there, right? So you have the ability to make use of that. So that was basically the load testing component of this. And let's get back to the slides and really discuss a little bit about. So I showed you exactly how to set up a load test with Visual Studio Ultimate, kind of. I pre-recorded it, but there's lots of tutorials out there if you want to know how to create a load test in Visual Studio Ultimate. And then basically what I did was I showed you how you can actually do it on-prem or in the cloud using the test settings and then running the test. So that's pretty cool. Yes, so browser editing. So when people think Visual Studio, which goes back to the question that I asked you before, was when people think about Visual Studio, they think of the IDE. And this is a workload that we've actually brought to, you know, to Visual Studio Online as well. It's
my favorite.
Well, it's interesting, but it's not what people might think. It's, you can't do everything that you can do with the Visual Studio client on your PC, but that's by design in some ways, right?
Right. I mean, let's think about this for a second, because obviously it would be awesome to have everything in the cloud, but like, going to your point earlier about what actually makes sense versus what's cool, yeah, it would be cool to have all of Visual Studio in the cloud, but
Yep. Are
you actually really going to do all of this stuff in the browser? I don't think so.
Yeah, exactly. So let's actually talk about this, and I'll show you exactly what this looks like. So the PGAL ALM Days project that I had here, I actually have up here. So I'm going to make this a little bit bigger so you can see what it looks like. Well, maybe I can't. So I have this this Windows Azure, Microsoft Azure website. And this is basically specific to Microsoft Azure websites right now. So you have to use Microsoft Azure websites in order to use the Visual Studio codename Monaco, which is our online IDE and currently in beta. So basically the website of it is called pjalalmdays2.azurewebsites.com. Now what happens is if you actually want to go to codename Monaco is you go pjalalmdays2.scm for service control manager .azurewebsites.net/dev. That's basically how you do it. So if I go there, just wait for this to show up. And there you go. So I'm back in it again. And as you can see here, we have our file explorer, which I'm looking at right now. That's what I'm focused on. You can see here, we also have, you know, the fact that, here, let's make this a little bit bigger. We have color coding. Oh, look at that. We even have our application insights sort of set up here. So this is a JavaScript hook in to the API as well, so that you can actually have that as well. Now, say, for example, I wanted to add something. If I wanted to say, well, there's a div, I can add a div. And it's got full completion and all of those types of things as well. I can even do something like, say, for example, just change this up, say div class, and automatically it figures out the color coding and whatever else. So you have the ability to have this sort of fairly rich interface. And it's good for quick changes to your website as you need and things like that. But it's also good for devices that may not be able to run Visual Studio. True. So I'm thinking Windows RT devices, for example, like your Surface 2.
Because imagine, you're on vacation. Mm-hmm. You're at the cottage with your Dell Venue Pro.
Yeah.
8-inch screen. Mm-hmm. And you just feel like building an app.
Yep. Exactly.
Mind you, that one has full Windows, so you could technically run Visual Studio.
Yeah, you could. Which I'm doing here. Like, I got a Surface
Fine,
Pro.
Fine, so your Surface 2.
Surface 2.
Or better yet, Surface 1, even.
Surface 1, yeah. Or Tony over there, who you can't see, can actually go into his website on his iPhone if he wanted to and actually do something.
or iPad or Android.
Or Android or whatever.
Point being, as long as this is all standards-based, HTML5, CSS3, HTML5, JavaScript, so there's nothing actually clever that you need to put into the browser in order to make any of this happen. So I guess what we're saying is anything and everything that supports modern web standards, you can go in and start coding your stuff.
You got it. And what's interesting here is, for example, I have all this sort of information here. I'm going to actually change the title page to say my ASP.NET application will say, hello, breakpointers. Okay, just like that. And basically what happens is you'll see here, if I actually go to something else, for example, you'll see that I've got a change here. And this change, for example, says, okay, well, we've got some changes. Now, because this is actually within TFS Online, is I actually created this as a Git repository as for my project.
Nice.
So now I can actually commit it. So I said changed tab title. And I'm going to commit it. And it's actually doing continuous integration, which is kind of cool. So one of the things that I didn't show you within Visual Studio, because you could open this up in Visual Studio on-premise if you wanted to as well, is I've actually got this set up for continuous integration if I want to. And you can set it up either way if you want. But say, for example, I want to take a look at this now. I'm going to run it. And it's going to go directly to my application. And as you can see here, it says, ALM days, hello breakpointers. So it's actually changed there. So that's exactly where we changed it. And that's all pretty cool. So right then and there, we actually have a way to show you how to make use of, you know, Codename Monaco for these like light changes to your website and things like that. So that's pretty cool. You can even do things like there's a console, so you can, you know, do things like JavaScript console to take a look at some stuff if you want to, and you know, other things such as, you know, show output and whatever else. So that's pretty cool. And we're just going to go back because I think we're running out of time as well. But there's lots of cool things that are coming into Visual Studio Online. Whoop, that's not what I wanted. Let's go back. Don't save it. That's fine. And we'll get back into the...
And this is what happens when you have a billion windows open.
Yeah, exactly, right? So very, very quickly, there's lots of stuff that you can do with that as well. And again, continuous integration right to Azure websites in this case. So that's pretty cool. And so what did I show you? So I showed you a little bit of how to get into Codename Monaco, working with the browser base. I didn't show you Kudu. Kudu is interesting. It's basically a API level control for your Azure websites, which is not necessarily directly connected to Visual Studio Online, but it is pretty cool. Maybe we'll talk about that in another episode because Jonathan's giving me the evil eye. And finally, the last thing I'm going to talk about, I won't actually go into it because I sort of talked about it already, is the fact that you can do automated builds. So the Azure website that I did, I made that change within the Codename Monaco, for example. I committed that via Git to my code repository in TFS. I've set up my build definition to say that every single time that I commit something into my source code repository, do a build. So it's actually building the website over again for me right there, right? So the ASP.NET website. But you can also make use of this for other things. So like if you have a very large system that you want to offset the capacity that you have within your own data center for doing your build, if it's a .NET application, you can actually offset that into the cloud, similar to what we did for load testing. So you can do that as a service as well. So that's available. And I won't get into that. So finally, conclusion, because I'm getting the hook. I can never be on time with this stuff because I love it, right?
See, and that's actually how I know you're passionate about it too, because I don't know how sensitive the mics are for you guys, but like Paul's like sitting there typing away like this at the keyboard. He's like, he's loving what he's doing. And then we get to the conclusion, you get so, and the audio levels go
exactly
crazy.
And what you may not be hearing is Jonathan kicking me under the table saying, wrap it up.
One of these days I will make sure that I would get him on time, but 6 episodes in and we haven't quite been there.
It's too much to talk about. It's amazing, right?
I agree. I agree. No one's complaining in the chat, so
well, there you go.
You might as well keep going.
All right. Oh, so we have another hour?
But we can't stay on forever. He actually wanted 4 hours today, but
yes. No. So
cut him to one.
So in conclusion, this is actually quite quick. It's about choice, right? So I talked about the fact that you can do lots of things on premise, and Visual Studio as an application lifecycle tool or offering is amazing in of itself. And when I talk to developers, whether they're using .NET or not, They see the value in actually using the Visual Studio platform as a way to them, for them to be more productive with their software development. And it's not just about developers, it's actually about the entire software team. Visual Studio Online has taken a workload approach to say, okay, what are the workloads that are most important to devs? And then provide them with opportunities to bring some of those workloads to the cloud so that if they choose to make use of that in the cloud, they can. Not saying they have to, but they can. And that's really what this is about. It's about choice. It's about providing the masses with opportunities to improve how they do things, while as, you know, not forcing them to do things that they feel that might be unnatural for their own specific scenarios and situations. So thank you very much. I'll stay on for just a little bit of time in case there's any questions. But go, the go-dos are basically sign up for a Visual Studio account at visualstudio.com. Start playing around with TFS online. Maybe try Codename Monaco. Start, you know, create a Azure trial for yourself, a 30-day Azure trial. So you
of course,
can
you
actually,
have one already.
You should, but if you don't, you can do that, azure.com. So they can make, for example, the websites and things like that, and you know, use source control in the cloud for something like that as well. So thanks again, and we will see you next month.
Yeah. Next month, eh?
Next month.
I was going to say, I'm like, what do we have on tap? But I don't know that we want to get into that right now since we keep you in suspense. Everybody's already like, Friday, it's time to go already, Paul. Like, anyway, all good. So hopefully, I mean, to me, obviously you can tell both of us go back and forth because we love this stuff. And and it really does actually make things a lot easier to get done from anywhere and everywhere. And especially as most companies are starting to start going to that model of, you know, a little bit more flexibility, a little bit more things across devices and whatever, the whole concept of how you can start working with Visual Studio now changes in a positive way to make that actually happen. So hopefully we went through that with you guys today. Hopefully you see that. Like Paul said, we're going to stay on the chat for a bit if you have any specific questions. Yes, this will be recorded for you. I mean, it is recorded and will be on demand for you. Stay tuned to at CDN Devs on Twitter or the Microsoft Facebook. I always get that confused. It's the Microsoft Developer Facebook page. If only it wasn't so long. We'll have that on there for you probably within another week or so. But don't forget, next month, same last Friday of the month, wrap it up with something cool and exciting. We may or may not go on hiatus. We'll decide for a bit.
I hope not. That'd be nice if we could go all the way through. But
I agree. Yes. And if you guys agree, then we want to see the tweets saying, yes, keep Breakpoint on for the summer. And if you are going to tweet, make sure you use Breakpoint CA
as
the hashtag so that we can see it and we can tell the powers that be that you guys want it. So with that, thank you very much. There is an eval form on the bottom of the page. If you can do us a huge favor and fill that out.
Please.
Or if you happen to not have gotten that, and you'll get it in the email anyway afterwards. So thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week.
Visual Studio Online, all the things. Got to put a meme in there. Or not.
I love this guy. I love this guy. That's why I keep him here, and that's why we present together. Anyway, see ya.
Ciao.